ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Prices shift, petrol jumps, shares fall. A company cuts jobs, and suddenly the business story is everyone's story.
I'm Alan Kohler.
And I'm Carrington Clark. From Monday to Thursday on ABC Business Daily, we break down the biggest stories in business, finance, and the economy, and why they matter.
Then on Fridays, I'll go deeper on That's Business, the people making decisions, taking risks, and shaping where the economy goes next.
Find it all in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
As a nation, it's a sport we love, Aussie rules. But it comes with a risk of head knocks for those who play it. And new figures reveal a big increase in the number of players known to have the brain disease, CTE, after their deaths. Today, Four Corners reporter Jess Halloran on her investigation. And a warning, this episode mentions suicide. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Jess, we're going to be looking at the science of CTE, this really awful brain disease linked to head knocks. But first, why don't you tell me about Mick Loudon?
Yeah, Nick Loudon was this incredible young footy player who had been playing since the age of six. He was really talented. He had won five Best and Fairest as a junior. And he really was on his way. He ended up being selected for this elite junior AFL team called the Gippsland Power. Mm. And that takes a lot to be able to be selected for a team like that. And Nick was really doing very well in that team. And then in 2017, he suffered a hit late in a game that was just devastating.
He went up for a mark and it looks like he's had his legs taken out from underneath him, and then he's just come down, hit his head on the ground. Tell he was out for a couple of seconds.
Okay, and you spoke to his parents, Kerry and Tony Loudon. Just tell me what they said about that moment.
So they saw this hit happen in the fourth quarter of a game in late August in 2017, and Nick, he really was knocked out. But what happened then was Nick Loudon was taken off, but then he was returned to play. Mm. He should never have been put back out again, but he was.
I think I said to you, I said, oh, Nick's back on. He played, but he didn't really have any impact on the game. When we went in after day one, you could see his eyes were rolling. I thought, he's not even here with us.
And after the game, we have footage of him, you know, unable to even remember the Gippsland Power team song. He was sort of looking up at this board where the team song was written, and he was trying to read the words and sing the words. You could see he was already suffering memory loss. And his parents said his personality really started to change after that concussion.
We noticed over the next 12 months he started to deteriorate. And he was a healthy, strapping young man, and he'd keep getting flu-like symptoms.
Sensitivity
to light. Mood changes, depression, which was absolutely horrendous for a young man, that he had so much going for him to have depression. We couldn't understand it.
Yeah, well, so he's 17 years old. He's suffered this big concussion. He did keep playing AFL after that, didn't he? At quite an elite level. But he couldn't get to the AFL competition where he really wanted to go because he was still suffering some pretty terrible mental health symptoms.
Yeah. Kerry and Tony said he used to be a very highly motivated young man and he was struggling with his depression. And he was saying to his parents, I don't know what's wrong with me. What is wrong with my brain? He just could not understand why he couldn't move himself out of this incredibly low mood. He would go and see psychologists, he tried medication, but he would say to his mum, nothing is working.
He said, Mum, they're not working. He said, why am I like this? What is wrong with me? What is wrong with my brain?
Yeah, and then tell me what happened in 2023.
Well, by this stage, Nick, while he didn't make the AFL, he was playing for some really top footy clubs. But behind the scenes, he was still battling and he was still struggling. And by 2023, he died by suicide.
And I'd like the AFL to know what it was like the day we found him. No one can put that into words, but after we found him, we just laid with him and cried because we couldn't let him go. And I don't think they understand what that's like for a parent.
Okay, so Jess, the thing is also about CTE, and this is such a terribly sad case, but it can only be diagnosed after death. So Nick's parents wanted to learn more about what happened to him, so they did agree to donate Nick's brain for research. And what did they find?
Well, they found that he had CTE and they had no idea what CTE was. And so what's happened since is Kerry and Tony Loudon have become very aware of what CTE is and are asking the question, why doesn't everybody know about this?
Okay, so Jess, why don't we then look at this disease a bit more and the science behind it? Now, for your story, you spend a lot of time with Professor Michael Buckland, who set up a brain bank to study CTE. He really has some revelations about the number of amateur and AFL players who've been confirmed to actually have it, hasn't he? Just tell me about the figures.
So we have these startling new figures from the Brain Bank that reveals that 33 Australian rules players have been diagnosed with CTE. Now, 19 of those are professional and semi-professional players and 14 of them are amateurs. And they're people in their 20s, 30s and 40s. For the first time, we're sort of seeing the scale of the problem. And it's a problem that Professor Michael Buckland says needs to be urgently addressed because we're seeing a lot of young people in this cohort of Australian rules footballers.
I think it tells all of us that there's a problem, that playing a lot of contact or collision sport leads you to have risk of CTE later in life. And it's a problem that needs to be urgently addressed.
And one of the sort of scarier findings about CTE is that you can get this not just from concussion, you can develop it from much less severe, intense, repeated knocks to the head over a period of time.
Yeah, it's a dose-related injury and it's the silent hits that contribute as well as the concussive hits. So it's the sub-concussive hits. It's like the whiplash, the bumps, the knocks. They're the hits that don't lead you to being knocked out, but are doing damage anyway. So neuroscientist Alan Pearce is someone who's been studying AFL football players for well over a decade now, and he is very alarmed by what's happening and has been calling for change for a long time.
The concussion protocols do not protect against CTE. These are the small impacts that come into the tens of thousands over a player's career from when they start through to when they retire.
And he's very concerned about what's happening and what he claims is the inaction of the AFL on this issue.
CTE is a preventable environmental disease. We could have saved lives with this. The AFL does have blood on its hands.
Well, Jess, why don't we then consider the AFL's response to this? Now, it has been accused of not taking studies into CTE seriously. What has the AFL been doing when it comes to trying to get to the bottom of what seems like a crisis?
Well, they've been asked by the coroner to set up a formal partnership with an Australian sports brain bank. Now, this came back in 2021. Following the death of Richmond player Shane Tuck, who was a 38-year-old footballer who died and had a very advanced CTE. And the coroner back then said, please set up a relationship with an Australian sports brain bank to better understand this disease. And that hasn't happened. But one thing that has happened just in the last week is that the AFL has reduced contact in training, and that was a recommendation by the coroner that they do so. So they say they are going to do that in this upcoming men's pre-season.
All right. So you asked for an interview with the AFL boss, Andrew Dillon. Now, he didn't sit down with you, but you did get to chat with the AFL executive, Laura Kane. So what did she tell you about how seriously the AFL is taking this?
Well, Laura, like the AFL has for many years, maintained that this is an incredibly serious issue, that they're treating incredibly seriously, and that the health and safety of players is their utmost priority, and they're doing all they can. They've made more than 30 rule changes to protect the head and ultimately the brain health of players. They're saying they're doing all they can, and yet they still don't have this partnership with the Brain Bank, which is a really big problem. They say they are doing a long-term study into AFL players' brain health, a $25 million brain health initiative that they announced in 2022. They say they're in a pilot stage.
We're committed to a long-term study that includes brain donation, and we will make sure that we deliver that research program with the overlay of brain donation if our players want to, in the safest way possible. And that's all being contemplated right now as part of our brain health initiative.
But they won't tell me when they'll be delivering any findings on that publicly.
But as you say, you know, Nick Loudon's parents, who we spoke about before, they didn't even know what CTE is. So what did Laura Kane have to say about that, about the AFL making players and their families aware of the risks associated with the sport?
Well, she said that our job is not to communicate the research findings of others necessarily. And she says it's not our job to communicate every single aspect of risk that you know exists in the game.
Our job is to govern our sport, and it's a shared responsibility, and it's a responsibility shared by everyone who works in contact sport.
And that really upset Kerry Loudon.
Risk is their responsibility, 100%. The risks involved in that game is 100% their responsibility.
Now, you've also spoken to other AFL players who have contracted suspected CTE. Now, one of them is Matty Robbins. Just tell me about him.
Yeah, Matty Robbins, he played for the Western Bulldogs. He played 146 games and he copped some huge hits. He even broke his neck during one collision, and he was returned to play 3 weeks later. I mean, just extraordinary now. You would hope that wouldn't happen in this day and age. But he said at the age of 42, he could feel he was developing dementia-like symptoms, and at 49, he's very concerned about his brain health.
I don't want to go through dementia. I won't put my kids through that. So we'd rather come up with a solution, but I don't know what that's going to be, but I won't put my kids through that. I won't ever do that.
You're saying you don't want to live?
Yeah.
And he's also applied to the AFL PA's Injury and Hardship Fund for a payment because he believes he would like to be compensated for what he's been through and the head trauma he's sustained from the game, but he's been knocked back for a payment. I mean, this is a major, major issue for the code at the moment, because what happened last May was the insurance market, the commercial insurance market, walked away from insuring AFL players for head trauma as a group. They think that they're uninsurable. Even though the AFLPA say they've got a $54 million fund, they won't say how many players have been paid out for head trauma as yet. They say they're still calculating the numbers. But the AFL Players Association maintain they're doing everything they can for these ex-players.
All right, well, Jess, given everything that you've looked at and everyone you've talked to, do you think we can be confident now that the sports administrators like the AFL are taking their responsibilities seriously? This is a huge sport in Australia, Aussie rules. We love watching it. We love playing it.
Yes. And coming back to Professor Michael Buckland, who is at the forefront of this issue, He says that more needs to be done. He believes there should be a CTE prevention policy being employed by the AFL. He thinks that more needs to be done from top to bottom of this sport. There are also experts like Dr. Anne McKee at Boston University who believes that kids just shouldn't be allowed to tackle until the age of 18, the age of consent. Kerry and Tony believe enough science has been done now that the risk should be communicated, especially to those parents who are enrolling their kids in to play Auskick and any form of the game. There's no time left to keep on exploring the link that it should just be acted on.
Let's stop this evading and saying that you haven't got the findings, and we're well past that. Everybody knows what causes CTE. Take accountability. Come and walk in our shoes for a day.
Jess Halloran is a reporter with Four Corners. You can watch her story tonight on ABC TV at 8:30 or see it on iView. And if you or anyone you know needs help, you can call Lifeline on 131114. This episode was produced by Bridget Fitzgerald. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coney. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.